Welcome to She Talks Tech, the brand new podcast from We Are Tech Women.
In relation to gender, a lot of women, females, girls will not get identified as autistic because we still see it through such a male lens. We don't understand that autism in girls and women and females is going to showcase differently. When we're looking at the intersection of kind of class, race, gender, sexuality, a lot of this is also kind of having the access to the assessments and to be able to kind of be diagnosed in the first instance.
I'm Vanessa Vallalee OBE, founder of We Are The City and We Are Tech Women. As an individual that's been a technologist, both in the corporate space and as an entrepreneur, I know how tough it can be to rise to the top of our profession. Women in tech make up just 17% of the industry in the UK, and those stats do not improve even if you look overseas. At We Are Tech Women, we want you to rise to the top of the industry. We want you to sit into senior positions and be key decision makers. It gives me great pleasure to introduce this brand new podcast to the suite of support we are already offering to women in tech across the globe. The She Talks Tech podcast will bring you stories, lessons, and tips from some of the most inspirational women and men in the industry. From robotics and drones to fintechs, neurodiversity, and coronavirus apps, these individuals are sharing their experience for the benefit of your learning. Today we hear from occupational psychologist, CEO and founder of Genius Within, Dr. Nancy Doyle. Nancy will be talking about neurodiversity in tech. Dr. Nancy has 20 years experience in neurodiversity and recently won a Public Policy Impact of the Year Award at BPS Division of Occupational Psychology. This award was for her outstanding work lobbying for an evidence-based approach to neurodiversity inclusion. We'll be discussing the benefits of neurodiversity, career progression for neurodiverse people, and how to systematically include people to benefit the tech industry. Dr. Nancy will look at the full range of talents associated with neurodiversity and how considering competencies and role description biases could open up a plethora of untapped talent within our organisations. Dr. Nancy will also discuss the need for mentoring, pre-employment outreach, and internships as a way of truly engendering social justice into the talent pool.
So, neurodiversity is a bit of a buzzword. However, 28% of long-term unemployed people are dyslexic, and only 10 to 15% of autistic people have a job. Further than that, at least 25% of prisoners have ADHD, yet only around 1% of those prisoners had a diagnosis. So even though neurodiversity has become quite a buzzword in the tech industry, it is still not having an impact on long-term figures of exclusion and inclusion. In fact, more broadly, the disability employment gap has stayed at 30%, i.e. 82% of working age adults have a job if they are not disabled versus 52% of working age adults who are disabled have a job. And that gap has not changed since we started making legislation. But in the tech industry, we've had a bit of a renaissance when it comes to neurodiversity, particularly. And we have been kind of deliberately bringing in people who are neurodiverse. We've had projects to deliberately hire neurodiverse people into tech companies across the world. And these have become quite famous. And not just tech companies now, we're also looking at some of the big four management consultancies and some key finance industries are also really pushing technology and neurodiversity inclusion. However, as I say, the reality on the ground is that exclusion is still the issue. And we are struggling with compliance-based inclusion, which is that when we bring people in who are different, we're not quite sure what to do with them. And we've still got big systems around us, norms within our organisation, such as the way we do HR, the way we do performance management, the way we do appraisals. And we're not really embracing as a system how to make it easy to work in an organisation if you are neurodiverse. And with our deliberate inclusion, where we're bringing people in specifically to do jobs that we know neurodiverse people might be good at, we're kind of keeping them together in teams. And I've got a bit of a challenge for the tech industry today. And I want to say to you that an autistic male white coder is not it. So the neurodiversity movement is bigger and wider and more diverse and less gender stereotyped and less racially profiled than the current way in which neurodiversity is intersecting with the tech industry. And I think one of the things that we should be aiming for is systemic inclusion for all. So we're really at step one in the journey, step one or two. So in the UK, we've got much better at compliance. So when individuals come into an organisation, we've got quite good at buffering around them as individuals. We know how to get speech-to-text software or text-to-speech software for autistic and dyspraxic colleagues. We know how to do things like minimising sensory overwhelm in the environment for some autistic colleagues. We know that people with ADHD might want to have jobs where they're allowed to move around and go out and see clients, and that would be a good fit for them. And so we're looking at individual levels of inclusion, and we've done the deliberate inclusion, we've brought people in, but we're not yet at the stage where neurodiverse people are just systemically peppered through an organization and have career progression routes. On the one hand, we're looking at neurodiversity, but on the other hand, we're undermining ourselves because we've chosen a form of neurodiversity which is particularly biased towards men, which is particularly biased towards white people, as our seed point of where to start embracing neurodiversity. And so when we think about neurodiversity in the tech industry in a more intersectional way, we realize that we are not really embracing systemic inclusion. We're still being a bit tokenistic. We're kind of ticking a little box here and we're doing one project that sits over here, and we're not using the neurodiversity paradigm to change the way we think. And actually, the ridiculous thing about that is that that is the benefit of the neurodiversity paradigm. So if you do the kind of big sell of why would you do neurodiversity? It's because people think differently. And if people think differently, then you get a wider range of innovation and creativity in your business. But actually, if we just bring people in and we put them in a little group over here and then they don't really go anywhere else, then we're not changing the way the organization thinks. We might have a little bit of exposure to some people who are slightly different to us, but we're not letting it filter through the whole organization. So thinking about systemic inclusion, we also have to add in these intersections of race, gender, sexuality, and say, is the way that we're targeting inclusion going to actually change the way that we think as a business? Is it going to give us that added layer of innovation in our thinking, or is it still kind of keeping things separate and in categories? So what does systemic inclusion look like? What might it look like? So I've been thinking about this for quite a while, and I think one of the things we need to be thinking about is the way that we change our organization so that more people come through the door naturally. So rather than sort of pushing people through the door in little groups here and there, we start thinking about what the organization looks like so that automatically more people come in. So the first thing we need to do, I think, is looking at outreach. What does an organization look like that I can belong to? And start looking around at the wider community that we might work in. So where we're actually placed, the cities that we work in, how diverse those cities are, and how representative our employee base is of those cities and locations that we're in, and our customer bases. So the customers that we've got, do we as an organization represent the full spectrum of neurodiversity within our customer base, but also neurodiversity intersecting with all those different ways in which people can be diverse? We need to look at job design. So one of the things about neurodiversity is that we're talking about specialist thinkers rather than generalist thinkers. So we're talking about people that might have an extremely detailed eye for graphic design, but haven't passed GCSE English. And when you look at that in terms of job design, you know, we have things like, oh, we want a data analyst that's also a team influencer. We want somebody who is creative and flamboyant and can present beautifully to customers, but can also do attention to detail. And actually, those aren't always the same person. And so when we've got those job designs where we say we want people to work independently and as part of a team, we're kind of limiting it to jacks of all trades and masters of none. And we need to sort for potential rather than just experience. One of the other things I think we can do is look at internships and paid internships where the adjustments happen from day one. And that those internships aren't just about giving somebody a chance. It's also about what can they give to us. If we take people in who are different to what we normally have on our entry level recruitment, who come from different backgrounds, who have different experience, what can they teach us about what we would need to do for people who are different to us to come in naturally without us having to kind of go out and get them. And that's the expertise that we could really learn with a standard intern program. And then the other thing that's going to work really well is mentoring. So building in succession plan from the start, knowing that you have to be flexible about adjustments. So if you are promoting people, they might need a new set of adjustments at a different stage of their career. And when I think about succession planning within organizations, is the only route to the top through line management? Do people have to be line managers before they can be successful strategic thinkers, before they can be innovators in the business development space? And that's a question I think a lot more businesses need to ask themselves, because that's one of the ways in which neurodiverse people in particular are thwarted in their careers. So let's just remind ourselves of what we're missing out on. So I think neurodiversity has been a real buzzword for a long time. I do think it's become synonymous with autism. And so I want to just take a moment to explain to you the full range of what we call neurodiverse conditions. And here they all are. So, you know, we've got all of these different conditions, autism, indeed, autistic spectrum condition, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, Tourette syndrome. We can also have neurodiversity when we think about mental health and acquired neurodiversity, which would be things like multiple sclerosis or chronic fatigue syndrome. And the way that those kind of conditions create neurodiversity is they require us to be flexible about our thinking. So things that we used to be able to rely on, like attention and concentration, we might no longer be able to rely on. And so we have to innovate our thinking and innovate our way out of that. And that leads to resilience. It leads to a different kind of sensory awareness, and it can bring depth of thinking and expression. So by including the full range of neurominorities within a neurodiversity program, you're going to have a much broader exposure to different human experiences, and you're going to be able to create and design and build for a much broader spectrum of customers. So I'd like to introduce you to the lovely Whitney, who is the CEO of Project 507. Whitney is someone I've worked with around and about for the last few years. She's a woman of mixed race and autistic spectrum tendencies. And she works with a wide range of people, many of whom are from very disadvantaged backgrounds and possibly would love to work in tech, would love to work in big corporate organizations, come from a wide background of mental health, trauma, systemic violence, and very much excluded from this conversation around neurodiversity and tech. So Whitney, can I just invite you to comment on the neurodiversity and tech love-in that seems to be happening right now and how that feels from the position that you hold?
The love-in. So
yeah,
as you were talking, I was making some notes, and you know, something that really kind of stood out for me as well is when we're looking at the intersection of kind of class, race, gender, sexuality, a lot of this is also kind of having the access to the assessments and to be able to kind of be diagnosed in the first instance and get support. And actually, due to such kind of lack of access, there's so many people, especially in my communities, where we wouldn't even identify as neurodiverse because we don't realize that's what it is. And there's so many people that feel like they're damaged or they're broken, and there's this intersectionality between people who have been through quite complex trauma, and again, their brain having to adapt and find new ways of surviving, and that, you know, develops neurodiversity as well. So if you're coming from that background as well, you know, you may feel like your brain is different, or you work different, or you're just different. So actually, there's this whole thing around, there's probably so many children in secondary school, for example, that are neurodiverse, but no one's having those conversations with them. And actually, they would excel in so many kind of different avenues, but the opportunities are not presented to them in the right way. So I think this understanding about outreach and how do we create tech organizations that are accessible, that people can see, that people want to join, that have that flexibility. And so for me, that was a kind of a big one as well, that just to identify that not everyone will even identify themselves as being neurodiverse, because if we think about what you were saying in relation to autism being a very male and a white male topic. So first of all, in relation to gender, a lot of women, females, girls will not get identified as autistic because we still see it through such a male lens. We don't understand that autism in girls and women and females is going to showcase differently. So with women, we're very good at dealing with the social aspects of it and putting patterns on our behavior. So you won't necessarily get what's going on in our minds and the beauty of our minds and how our minds can work and will work in a very similar way to a lot of men with autism as well in a certain aspect.
That's the same in ADHD. So the expression of hyperactivity in ADHD has been typified towards the way males are trained to express hyperactivity in society. And females with ADHD are much more likely to internalize, like, or to do small hyperactive movements like repeated hair twiddling or nail chewing. It's still excess energy. There's research that suggests that the genetic profile of autism doesn't change according to the genders at all. So the expression of those genes
and it's how it's learned. So if a girl is twiddling her hair, it's seen as a very feminine thing to do. So it's not going to get picked up as ADHD. And then if we bring race into it and we think of how many young black boys are excluded from school because they might be hyperactive or have challenging behaviour, actually, how many are autistic, how many are neurodiverse that are not having that skill set channeled because of the kind of institutional bias, the institutional racism that is kind of projected onto them. And then if you want to kind of intersect and being a black woman with autism, for example, so one of my closest friends is a black woman with autism, and she's extremely blunt in the way that she speaks. In fact, it's hilarious watching us two talk. We sound like we hate each other. But that bluntness is just part of who we are. And actually, when you come from a, you know, black and brown communities as well, there's already this narrative of, oh, you're difficult. You know, you're angry. You know, there's this, you know, it's racism. You know, it's just projected on. But actually, when you have autistic tendencies or you're on the autistic spectrum, that bluntness is just how we communicate. You know, we don't have that small chit chat. It doesn't work. I've got in so much trouble for it. But that's just part of who we are. But the way that it's perceived tends to have so many biases to it. So I think there needs to be a lot of work done on kind of the organizations as well and challenging their own perceptions of different groups of people.
So thinking about this overlapping Venn diagram I've got, the skills that we're missing out on when we don't include neurodiversity. In tech so far, we've been very focused on the concentration, fine detail processing and memory and how that is applied to coding. But, you know, just on the neurodiversity line alone, we're missing out on the visual thinking, we're missing out on mechanical skills, we're missing out on observational ability from Tourette syndrome. And then when we apply a racial lens to that and a gender lens to that and a sexual orientation lens to that, we're also missing out on the communication of those individuals within an organization and how that might lead us to develop new products or new ideas that are better suited to the customer base, which is colourful, diverse, divergent, and much more of a rich tapestry. So these things that I've kind of recommended as looking at this from the systemic level. So before we start targeting people, we look internally and we go, right, how am I doing outreach? What do I look like from outside the organisation? How do I look? And therefore, am I going to attract people to me that are diverse in any way? Looking at job design, where we're a bit more creative about the way we list things that people should or shouldn't be able to do, and then looking at interns and mentoring, how much do you think that would address some of the issues we've got about disadvantaged communities being able to take part in the tech industry?
I think a lot. I mean, especially internships, for example, so especially if we look at the economics, and, you know, a lot of times in communities where there is a lot of diversity, there isn't that diversity and opportunity. And actually, we need those opportunities in order for, you know, the communities to thrive in the first place. And actually, when we're thinking about kind of diverse communities, especially communities where there might be a lot of poverty on top of neurodiversity, actually, these are environments where people build up the resilience to really thrive. So if you're bringing in people from these communities, and actually, a lot of the times, you're really tapping into such an amazing skill set. And I think that, Nancy, what you were saying in relation to the, you know, you miss all the rest of it, all the colourfulness, all the visual stuff. And we have to get out of this kind of one size fits all model, because even the emotional intelligence to a certain degree is patterns as well. So technically, I should not thrive with anything emotional or social. But the last time I had my emotional IQ test, it was like top 5% in the country. But that's literally because I've learned the patterns. so I can do psychotherapy and psychology because I have the patterns. Because actually it's the way the mind can process information and not necessarily just the information that's being processed.
You've taken that detail focus that you get from an autistic brain and applied it to the detail of emotions. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we need to stop thinking of, oh, it's just coding and, you know, you can do, you know, put me in front of a computer, I can, you know, take your computer apart and rebuild it.
Yeah, you could apply that to looking at emotional engagement in an organization or turnover patterns in from an HR perspective or finance. Absolutely. So it's not limited to just the coding.
Yeah, it's more like, you know, there's processes that particular minds use, and actually it's the process that's the benefit. It's not necessarily the, you know, what that process is being used for. That process can be used on many different things. And I think we need to understand that these types of mind, they come from many different people. It's not just, you know, the white male who's autistic.
The white male who's autistic who happens to have had a computer to play on for the last 15 years and has therefore got really good at coding. Yeah,
there's so much more to it. But I like the idea of the mentorship and the being able to skip steps, for example. You know, I know, you know, so many people don't like managing teams. And actually, if you have to then be a line manager before you can become a consultant or senior management, it might not work if you know, you don't particularly like dealing with people. You can think through the patterns. How you were saying before about the job, I might not necessarily be the same person and you might need two people for the same job. Or you might need the same
job
person.
Share. Lovely.
But on different days, I know, for example, that my brain works really well. You know, I can do logical and I can do creative and I can do it in equal measures, but I can't switch. I can't go from one to the other. So on a Thursday, you can get my logical brain. On a Friday, you can get my creative brain. But it doesn't necessarily mean I can do it all in the same day. So it's about recreating the workplace as well and how we, you know, job design.
Yeah, I agree. And from an ADHD perspective as well. So as a woman with ADHD, I find that I work in big bursts. So I might have a 70-hour week in me where I just nail a project. I need a longer weekend. You know, it's going to take me more than 2 days to recover from that. And so there's something about the kind of standard boxed in Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. I mean, I haven't had a boss since I was 24, and I don't think you've ever had one, have you?
Or 20 was the last time I had a boss.
20, absolutely.
13 years ago.
There's something very entrepreneurial about neurodiversity, and the organizations that want to capture that entrepreneurialism are missing the trick, I think, that the reason that we're not there is because we can't do Monday to Friday in one big busy
and that's the one reason why, you know, I was like, I'm gonna start my own companies, because an office 9 to 5, I've never done a 9 to 5. It's my idea of hell, you know. They could barely keep me in school. Like, you know, I wasn't doing 9 to 5 at all, and I will never do a 9 to 5. And it's that kind of, some days I want to work at 1 o'clock in the morning. Some days it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Some days it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I need that flexibility, because it's my mind leads my work rather than my body or capitalism.
Or the HR process. Absolutely. Yeah. So these four things that I've got as kind of steps towards systemic inclusion, let's just talk about internships for a minute, because this is something that's really interesting to me. So in my company, Genius Within, as well as working with businesses and HR departments, we also do work with people who are long-term unemployed. And something that I've tried to do a couple of times in my head office is hire people with disabilities from organizations that do what we do just in my area. For some reason, I don't have a contract in my area, so it wouldn't be right. I don't know why. I found it really, really difficult to go out into that market and hire people with disabilities. But what I'm really, really aware of is that in my pool of people who are long-term unemployed, we have the intersection that we seek. Do you know? So if we are looking at internships for people who've been long-term unemployed, we're going to hit all of those targets that we've given ourselves around race inclusion, gender inclusion, disability inclusion. We're going to hit all those targets. So I think we should stop worrying about the targets and start worrying about where and who are we not including. Let's change ourselves and let's have people in on internship programs, not so that we can tick the box and say we've done it, but so that we can learn with those interns, what is it that we're not doing right that would have made it easy for you to come in the first place? And then the other thing that we do in employability, which bothers me hugely, is we talk about job readiness. I find it a really patronizing phrase, but are you job ready? And I wonder whether we've got too much attention on how we have to change individuals so that they can fit into the organization. I think instead we should be saying, how do we as an organization need to change so that we can include people who are not quite like us? And that's the whole point of the neurodiversity movement is experiencing the full range of human potential. And so if we're waiting for neurodiverse people to become neurotypical enough that we can let them come through the door, then we kind of missed the point of the whole movement, haven't we?
Yeah.
I think for me, the target needs to be, let's not target autism this week, and we'll target sexual orientation, gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans, queer. That's our focus next year. And then the year after, we're going to look at gender. If we carry on targeting categories like this, it's never going to become embedded in the way we do things. What we need to do is have these deliberate inclusion programs that are more intersectional by just going out and going, right, where are we not represented? Where's our target customers not reflected in our staff? Let's go find a group of people and then let's learn from them.
Yeah, and what might they need in order to be able to access these opportunities? Because like you say, the benefit of having a computer, I think COVID has taught us how many children and young people, for example, don't have computers in their house.
Absolutely.
They are struggling because they can't do their schoolwork.
That's so right.
How would you expect them to get into coding if they don't have broadband, if they don't have, you know, computers?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we've got this whole area where people are not going to be job ready. They're not going to be absolutely, you know, fresh, signed, sealed and delivered. They just happen to be completely ready to start work with us. So the internship being almost like the outreach, you know, so internships as outreach. So we consider, you know, do we look like the kind of organization that is as inclusive as we want it to be? No, we don't. Okay, let's go and find a wider range of people and let's bring them in and go, right, what's wrong? What are you struggling with? What's hard? And then rather than adjusting and building buffers around those people as individuals, we go, right, well, then these are the things that we need to make standard. So, for example, some of the stuff that we do at Genius Within a lot of for employees is training around time management, organizational skills, prioritizing workload. This is stuff that is implicit work skills that neurodiverse people don't tend to come with.
Yeah.
So some people learn that stuff automatically. Some people get taught that stuff. Some people who are well embraced in the education system find that stuff easy. But neurodivergent people, neurodiverse people don't tend to find that stuff easy. So we teach it explicitly. So if we know that 15 to 20% of our potential workforce is going to have issues with time management, organizational skills and communication and prioritization, then we just start training that as part of our induction packages rather than waiting for people to struggle with their workload and then having to intervene. So if we have to intervene, if we have to wait for people to struggle before we intervene, then by the time we intervene, they are going to be lacking in self-confidence, possibly in trouble performance-wise, and relationships have started to break down. So just to leave you with the thought that inclusion is a moral, social and economic imperative, and that we all lose when human potential is squandered. Thank you very much for chatting with me, Whitney. I think that was really useful. And I hope that that has given people something to think about in terms of ways to be more intersectionally inclusive and to embrace the values of the neurodiversity movement in tech.
I'd like to say a huge thank you to Dr. Nancy Doyle for joining me on today's episode of She Talks Tech. It was such an insightful session that I'm sure will be of benefit to all of our listeners. And on that note, a huge thank you to you for tuning in and listening. We really appreciate your support. You can find out more about Dr. Nancy by visiting her website at geniuswithin.co.uk or following her on Twitter at Nancy Doyle Psych. That's P-S-Y-C-H. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd really appreciate if you subscribe. The great thing about subscriptions is you'll get future notifications of our upcoming episodes, of which they are going to be fantastic. If you enjoy what you hear, please rate the podcast and give us a 5-star review. We look forward to welcoming you next Wednesday morning for a brand new episode of She Talks Tech from We Are Tech Women.